We did, you know, missions trips. We met with other college groups. One of our favorite things was to meet. I actually lived in California for a little while. We moved to Colorado, and then we for several years we met back together with the college group that I had come from, the youth pastor that I'd worked under or worked with while in college. We would get back together, and we would regularly meet together. But nobody really taught on these things. I don't know if it was just the time back then. It was pretty much, look, just be godly, and relationships will happen. And I mean, that's not bad advice. Maybe I could just finish. All right, but just be godly, and we're finished. That's all I need to say. But the Bible really does have a lot more to say about it than that. And in fact, not surprisingly and not coincidentally, the Bible God in through His Word is very. It is His desire that we would know how it is that we live out relationships in a way that is pleasing and honoring to the Lord. Clearly, that is what we were designed to do, is to please Him and honor Him in relationship. And as I said, I was, you know, I didn't really get a lot of teaching on it. And when I was in college, my, you know, the one thing that I wanted to do, I wanted to go into ministry. So I was pursuing various ministry things. And I just kind of thought if marriage was ever going to happen, it would just kind of happen, kind of by accident. And that I didn't really think much about it. In fact, my first couple years in college, the mentor that I was working with, the youth pastor I was working under, he kept putting young ladies working with me in Sunday school and other things, and he was trying to get me to pay attention to maybe doing something like asking someone out, and I was totally clueless. Finally, came to me, he goes, "I mean, are you ever gonna ask anybody out at all?" I was like, "Well, I never really thought about it." He goes, "How about the people that I've been putting in your classes?" And I was like, I never really noticed. I'm quite honestly. So I was busy working at McDonald's. I worked 5 nights a week. Worked 40 hours. I was going to school, taking 15 to 16 hours. I was working in the youth ministry, and I was pretty content to do that. Well, one time in the summer, we went and met with the group that we had been meeting with for several years from California. We were on houseboats in the middle of Lake Powell, Utah. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's like they took the Grand Canyon and filled it up with water. So there's these incredible red limestone or sandstone canyons that are filled to like 300, 400 feet deep of water. So we had ski boats and houseboats. And we actually, you hop on the houseboat, you go as far out as you can. You find a canyon that you take your houseboat back in. Then you just water ski and enjoy the time. And I was having the time of my life, but I still was completely uninterested in anything relationship oriented. However, there was on that particular trip a couple who decided that it was their job to make a match with like everybody that wasn't doing any dating in the youth group at all or in the college group at all. So we came slowly, you know, came under the fire from this couple. What they would do is they would just say, "Hey, can we go talk? Can we walk on the beach?" And they were a couple from California. I knew them, but not super well. And so you get kind of suckered. "Oh yeah, let's take a nice walk on the beach." And they would say, "Who do you like?" I mean, like we were in grade school or something. And I was like, "I don't like anybody." "Yes, yes, you do. Who do you like?" Well, then they would try to get, "So how about so-and-so?" They start naming people off. "Do you like so-and-so? Do you like so-and-so? Do you like so-and-so?" "No, no, no." And if you paused, "Do you like so-and-so?" I was like, "Ah, that's the person." Literally, this is how this went. So there was a particular girl there. Her name was Elisa. And I didn't know her super well. In fact, she was very new to the group. And we'd been playing volleyball together. And all that I really remembered about her was that she had spiked the ball on my head. I remembered that. That stuck out to me. So they said, "Do you like Elisa?" And I paused. But probably not out of any great, at that time, love for Elisa. I just simply remembered, "Oh, she's the one that hit me with the ball." And they're, "Okay, that's all we need to know." And then they're walking off. And I'm walking down the beach with nobody else. Well, little do I know, what's the next thing they do? They go to Elisa, "Hey, let's walk down the beach." And so we're walking down the beach, and they go, "Do you know that Chris likes you?" I mean, this is the kind of thing that they were doing. Now, James, don't ever do this. I mean, clearly this is not what would happen here. I don't think, well, I don't know, Justin. We'll talk about Justin. But you guys, so what? As it all worked out, by the end of the time, I had somehow, and I still to this day do not know how this happened, I had made a commitment somehow that I was going to ask her out. I mean, literally, I went on that retreat having no interest at all in asking anybody out. I leave the retreat having made a promise that I'm going to ask Elisa out, whom, I mean, I really knew almost nothing about except that she continued to spike the ball in my head, I think, all throughout the week. I probably never once spiked it on her head. But actually, when I left the camp, I was absolutely committed to not doing that. I was kind of thinking, well, I committed that, but I mean, is that really a promise? I mean, it was, but so I had no intention at all of asking around. I was like, I'm not going to do that. So I was going about my business. About 3 weeks later, I was out with the youth pastor's wife. We were putting together a scavenger hunt for the high school group that I worked with, and so I'm driving with her. We're putting together various clues, and she looks at me. She goes, "Okay, now we're going to stop at your house, and you're going to call Lisa and ask her out." And I was like, "No, we're not stopping at my house." She's like, "I mean, you only say that once to the youth pastor's wife." She was like, "Yes, we're doing that." So we did. We stopped at my house, and I called her up. And actually, I don't think I asked her out at that moment. I think I said, "Can I talk to you tomorrow?" We were busy. We were doing a thing. We were doing some door-to-door witnessing that we did with both college and high school. So she was just new in that, and I was kind of overseeing that, kind of my first time to help oversee that, and she was part of it. So I said, "Hey, can I talk to you about something tomorrow?" So she shows up there, and I still was not sure that I was going to ask her at all. But I said, "Hey," so I postponed it even further. I said, "Hey, can I call you this afternoon?" So this is like three iterations later, because I'm still trying to figure out what do I say and what do we do? I mean, I've been on just only a couple dates ever in my whole life, so I didn't really even know what to do. So finally, I went home. I'm thinking about it, and finally I called her up. And the only thing I could think to do was go to dinner and a movie. That's what you do, right, when you go on a date. So I looked up something. I think it was like Crocodile Dundee. Don't ever go see that. That is a horrible movie. And I never went to movies ever. I mean, I never went. But it's like there was one, and there was dinner. So we did dinner. We did a movie. The movie was absolutely horrible. We both thought it was horrible. The dinner was not much better. So the next time, but somehow we managed to make it through that first date. And I asked her if she wanted to do something again, and she was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "That's stunning, because I wasn't really expecting that you would do that. It was a horrible movie, and the dinner wasn't great. And I don't know that we talked all that much, because we didn't really have much to say." So I decided, well, the next one is going to be better. I'm going to take a rock climbing. That's what I really like to do. So, and without really, again, knowing a whole lot about her, I decided that we would hike out to Independence Monument, which is like a 2.5 hour hike in the blazing sun. It's the middle of the summer. Right, and I'm like, "Hey," and I didn't really tell her all that. I said, "Hey, we're gonna go rock climbing." So she shows up. I think she maybe had a water bottle or whatever, and we start hiking. I mean, literally, it's 2.5 hours. I didn't think much of it. That's the kind of thing that I did. But that wasn't, and Elisa was certainly plenty outdoorsy, but she wasn't really expecting a 2.5 hour hike one way. So we hike, and we're rappelling. So I climbed up part of it, and then I set up the rappel, and she's rappelling down. It's like her second or third time ever rappelling. Well, she's rappelling down for the second time. And I heard kind of a crash against the rock and some rustling, and I was still up at the top. So I came down and said, "Everything okay?" "Oh, yeah, everything's fine." I'm like, "Okay." So we finished up ourselves. We hiked 2.5 hours back. Our water is completely out, of course, at that time, because nobody brought enough. We get back in the car, and as she sits in the car, I see this blood just pooling in her shoe. And she had gashed herself. I mean, it was really deep, and yet she didn't want to tell me. I mean, it's the second date. You don't want to say, "Oh, I just hurt myself, and I'm bleeding all over the place." And so she wasn't even going to tell me. I'm like, I'm like, "I can't believe that I just harmed you on our second date, and I about killed you. She's bleeding all the way back." So we never dated again after that. Actually, I don't know that we ever did an official date again after that. Everything else we did was doing something with the youth group or the college group. That was it. So that was probably our first two official dates. We kind of then just began to do some stuff together. And over time, as we did ministry together, that was a much more natural. We might have gone on an official date. And we eventually probably went on a real hike and did some other things like that. But all that to say, I entered into relationships really wanting to please and honor the Lord in my life, but knowing very little about how to actually pursue a relationship. And I did kind of think it would just happen, and it didn't really just happen. There were some things that I wished that I had known, some things that I wished that I had done earlier on, just ways that I conducted that relationship. I mean, if you want to fast forward it, we dated, I guess you can call it that, right? We had two official dates, and then the rest of it was just youth groups and ministry stuff. Broke up after about 8 months, said, "No, we're done. Don't want to see each other anymore." Actually, neither of us really believed that, but it just seemed like the thing to do at that time. So we did that, and after about a week, or really 2 weeks, every time I walked around the corner, I was expecting to see her, and I'm like, "Well, we need to try this again." So I asked her if she would go out with me again. She said, "Well, all right, we'll try it again." I took her on a regressive fast food dinner. That was a really weak date. Don't try that. So you go eating like dinner at McDonald's and Wendy's and things like that. I'm not sure what I was thinking at the time. So after we finished that date, I said, "Hey, do you wanna go on another one?" And she goes, "Well, now we have, there's much, if you've heard our story, some of you have heard our story, there's much debate on this point. I said, do you want to get together again? Because they had been miserable. She was miserable. I was miserable. The McDonald's food was miserable. And so I said, hey, you want to do this again? And my recollection is that she said, hey, I'll pencil you in. And I was like, no. I mean, I don't want to be penciled in. Her recollection is she said, hey, yeah, I'll put you on my schedule. That's what she said. She said, and I thought it was pencil. So I was ready at that time. I'm done. So I'll take this step one step further. I wasn't really expecting to share quite this much. But anyway, I had to finish it out. So I was right in the middle of that. I got involved. I was in skiing and I got in an accident. Was about to get surgery on my knee. So the night I'm about to get surgery on my knee, this had just happened. This date had just happened. She had just told me I'll pencil you in. And I'm like, we're done. So I called her up. She worked at a radio station until about 2 in the morning on Friday nights. I called her up and was going to break up on the phone, which is classy. So I was just going to say, no, we're done. Somewhere in that conversation, and who knows how this actually happened, and maybe I heard it wrong. We still have some debate about it. Somewhere in there, she said, look, if you were to ask me to marry you today, I would do it. And I was like, what? From pencil me in, which is what I thought she said, to I'd marry you? And then we're right on. I mean, it's never even, it wasn't like that was some mic drop moment. She's like, and then she just continued on. But that's the only thing I remembered from the rest of the conversation. So being, again, the classy, slow-moving, and careful guy that I am, I said, hey, you want to come over after work? And I had two roommates. They were up, and so there was, things going on in the house. But and she's like, okay. And so she came over at, 2 in the morning? My roommates are up doing whatever they did. One of my roommates used to work on his motorcycle in the house, and so he'd fire it up in the house. And the motorcycle was literally sitting there in the living room, half apart. My other roommate was kind of an outdoorsy guy. He had this lantern that he would use instead of the light. I don't know why. And it, burned a hole in the ceiling. I'm not kidding. This is all true. And so we're sitting there with a burned-out lantern and the motorcycle, and they're upstairs kind of pretending that, they're not around, but they're kind of trying to figure out what's going on. And we're sitting on the couch, and so I said, hey, do you know why I asked you over? Like she knew. She's like, no. Why am I here at 2 in the morning doing this? So will you marry me? Now you guys are like, that was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. Absolutely. That's not what I'm going to teach you. And we're not going to do it that way. And guess what she said? Yes. Now, that's the weakest proposal ever. I had no ring, I had no money, I had a job, I was in the middle of school, but I figured if I don't strike when the iron's hot, it's not going to happen. Somehow the sovereignty of God is going to be undone the next day, that it was going to be over and she would never consider marrying me again. Why do I say that? Well, it's humorous, for one. It's not a great example for the other. Although, to defend myself, when we were at the elders' retreat, after my son proposed, in a much better way than I did. All the elders shared our proposal stories. Mine was still the worst. It was still the worst, but only by a little. Only by a little. Because back then, I don't know, maybe you just didn't do it the way these days. You have a reveal and you have pictures and there's a drone flying by and there's music playing and you put it all on Facebook, and you make a movie out of it. But I say that really because there were the ways that I pursued the relationship. One, the Lord was gracious to us. We did want to serve the Lord. We did want to honor him, and the Lord protected us and guarded us and ultimately directed us into now 30 years. We celebrate 30 years of marriage this year. And so there's, in one sense, it doesn't have to have all this perfect and be done just right and do all these right things and get it just every little step along the way. But there are things that I should have known, ways that I should have prepared, things that I should have thought about that would have been a blessing to both of us because it started off a little rough. And so my prayer is that maybe learning from experience, but mostly from Scripture, you will have the opportunity to treat each other, to enter into relationships and to develop relationships in ways that are more biblical. Because the Bible does give us the things that we're supposed to be thinking about and preparing for and working towards so that you have the best possible opportunity to both enter into and exit out of relationships in ways that are pleasing and honoring the Lord, and prayerfully for most of you to find the person that you will one day spend your life with. So that's my prayer. I hope and pray that as we work through these principles that will be an encouragement to you, and that maybe some things that you haven't thought about would come to mind now, that you'd begin to not fixate upon relationships, but to fix your heart and your mind and your eyes on the Lord Jesus and how he would have you conduct yourself in this very important part of your life in relationship. So 1 Corinthians chapter 7, This is a very complex chapter. We're only going to look at a couple of verses, and then I'm going to access a lot of the other pieces of the chapter. Just to give you some background, the Apostle Paul is trying to deal with the just incredibly tangled and difficult and really, in many ways, sordid marriage relationships in Corinth. These people are coming out of idol worship. They're coming out of prostitution as part of the temple worship that they were involved in. 2,000 temple prostitutes would flood the streets at night in Corinth, plying their trade in the name of religion, both male and female prostitutes. All right, our best understanding is that marriage and divorce were absolutely rampant. You'd have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 marriages. You'd have people married and then sleeping with the temple prostitutes on the side. I mean, you think things are bad now? It was an incredible mess. And all of this was in the church. Brand new believers, the church itself a mess. They're trying to get all this stuff sorted out. And the Apostle Paul is trying to bring some biblical clarity and sanity to this situation. Now, certainly, I would say our day and age is probably not as far gone as that. And certainly you guys in your relationships and in most of the experience you have probably have not seen or participated in that kind of thing. Yet, our society really is headed that way, with an utter and complete breakdown in what relationships are, what marriage is, what singleness is for, and how it is that we enter into marriage or not enter into marriage, as it may be, in ways that are pleasing and honoring to the Lord. So he's trying to deal with all of these problems, speaking to believers. Again, certainly there were some unbelievers there, but trying to give them principles in which, with which they can evaluate how it is that they should now press on in the Lord, since so many of them were new believers. Right? And they come in, some unmarried, some newly divorced, some in marriage, believer to unbeliever, some engaged still in prostitution, all of these crazy things going on. So he's going to try to bring some clarity. And we're going to look at his exhortation to those who are single, to those who are unmarried. So beginning in verse 32, it says, "I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. One who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife, and his interests are divided." Verse 33. Or now verse 34. "But one who is married is concerned about things of the world, how he may please his wife, his interests are divided. The woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband." Verse 35. "This I say for your benefit, not to put a restraint upon you, but to promote what is appropriate and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord." Now, the majority of you here are single, that is, unmarried at this time. Thus, you need to know really what the Apostle Paul is trying to describe in this chapter, how to live out this season of your life to the greatest possible glory of God. That's what you're supposed to be doing. You're not waiting for something else in that sense, right tonight and right in the stage in your life. The only thing that you are waiting for in one sense is how it is that you can learn and grow in knowing how to bring glory to God in this particular state in which you are. When you bring glory to God in the state you are now, not some later one, not some a state that you wish you were in, then you truly find your greatest satisfaction and the greatest possible effectiveness for the kingdom of God. It is only in that contentment, it is only with that purpose to bring the greatest possible glory to God that you will actually be content at all. It isn't with having a relationship or getting out of a relationship or somehow, you know, designing your life around those things. It is designing your life around the glory of God. Now, the first burning question that I need to answer is, since you are single, do you have the gift of singleness? Now, I'm going to answer that very easily tonight. We're going to spend more time on that, much more time on that, tomorrow morning. But the answer is yes. You, each one of you, have the gift of singleness. What am I saying? In other words, if you're currently single, you have the gift of singleness because God has gifted you with singleness at this time. There's more to it. That is, and I know what you're really asking is, do I have to stay single? All right, I understand that's what you are thinking, but I'm answering your question as I believe it needs to be answered. You have been given a gift. The gift right now is that you are not married because that's the situation that you are in. That's what God has gifted to you. That is what he has specially provided for you. Remember this. Always remember this. God is your father if you're a believer, and we'll talk about that. If you're not a believer, then you're not under his fatherly care. You're open to the command and the sway and the dictation of the evil one and your own sin. But if you are a child of God, if you put faith and trust in Christ, then you have a heavenly Father who only does what is for your good. It is impossible for him to give you something that isn't good for you. And since he is sovereignly in control of all things, every circumstance, every moment of your life, then this time in your life is a precious gift from him. That's what I mean when I say you have right now the gift of singleness. He's given it to you. What are you going to do with that precious gift? Now, it does seem that the gift of singleness, right, is used in this way in 1 Corinthians 7. He says, he's talking to a variety of different people. In 1 Corinthians 7:27, he says, are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be released. Are you released from a wife? Do not seek a wife. He's going to affirm singleness. And certainly someone who has just been married wouldn't say, hey, I had the gift of singleness, right? As some kind of innate desire. But he's saying, look, now that you are unmarried, you are in a single state, that's the gift the Lord has for you right now. You need to consider. And you need to consider staying in that state unless you are absolutely sure that you need to change it. So that's why I know that the gift of singleness is more than simply some innate desire to remain single. It has to do with the very state in which God has placed you. He says in 1 Corinthians 7:20, each man must remain in the condition in which he was called. That is, when you are called, it is first your responsibility to figure out, how do I please God right where I am? Then, and only then, can you proceed forward. And that's going to be an underlying principle for all of you. It's not, how do I get to the next stage? It is, how do I find pleasure and satisfaction in the stage I am in now? Because we always tend to think, if I'll get to the next one, then I'll be happy. And because we weren't happy and biblically content here, we're never happy at the next step. As in biblically happy, as in truly content. We always think we're going to be. And we always think, if I can just get there, it'll be okay. Paul says, no, stay in the place, the condition that you are. Particularly when you first come to Christ, because you have to figure out how to find joy there, how to be satisfied there. So it is pretty clear that part of the gift of singleness, even as mentioned in 1 Corinthians 7, has to do with the very condition, the decree of God, that is, you are in this condition now. Now, as we will talk about tomorrow, I think there's more to it. In 1 Corinthians 7:7, he says, I wish that all men were even as I myself am, that is, he was single. However, each man has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. And I think that speaks to a more settled desire to not move out of the single state that I think the Lord provides as well. So I think it's both, but it certainly isn't anything less than what you have right now, which is that you are currently single. God is sovereign over your singleness. We're going to look into the issue of this specialized permanent singleness. But now we're going to operate on the biblical principle that God is sovereign over your singleness, that he has given it to you at this time as a special gift of his love, and that whether or not you desire to remain single, you have the obligation, responsibility, and joy to use this gift wisely and biblically. You will never be in this exact spot again. Even as you progress forward, even if you stay single, where you are right now and the opportunities you have right now are unique to you, and you need to use them wisely and well. I don't know why you came on this retreat, right? I have no idea. You know, you say, well, we want to have fun with my other friends. We're intrigued maybe by the topic, maybe, right? We want to hang out in Tennessee. But you are here for a purpose. The Lord has planned for you to be here. He's planned for you to be single. Again, that's most of you while you are here. And so he wants you to use this for his glory to the fullest extent. So here's my overall theme for tonight. God has provided every single person with a season of singleness for his glory, for your joy and benefit, and for the blessing of others. God has provided every single person with a season of singleness for his glory, for your joy and benefit, and for the blessing of others. Singleness, in every case, is a gift of God to be used for his glory. So, how are you going to find joy in your singleness? The first way, the first topic that we'll get tonight, is through having a proper concern. I think your title says joy through concern, and you're like, what does that mean? You can add proper to that, joy to proper concern. And I draw that from the text. Again, go back to verse 32. Paul says, but I want you to be free from concern. Now, wait a minute. You just said that we're going to have joy in our singleness if we have a proper kind of biblical concern, but Paul starts off with saying, I want you to be free from concern. Well, watch what he does. I want you to be free from concern. One who's unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But the one who is married is concerned about the things of the world. Notice he says, I want you to be free from concern. But if you're unmarried, you're concerned about the things of the Lord. If you're married, you're concerned about the things of the world. It's not that he doesn't want them to have a proper biblical pursuit of or a thought process about. That is, carefully fixing their mind on one state or the other, singleness or not. Is that he wants them to understand how it is that they are to process or to live out this relational concern that they have. The word free from concern means, look, free from trouble, worry, care, or I would say in this case, sinful anxiety. But when he says, I want you, the one who's married is concerned about this, the one who's unmarried is concerned about this, he's saying there is a realm in which you are to have a proper biblical concern, a biblical focus, and it's different for the one who is married and unmarried. So he wants you to be free from an ungodly concern, either about marriage or singleness, but he wants you to be focused properly on accomplishing the work that he's given, which takes a certain amount of mental preparation and direction. Because that's often, that's how he's going to use concern here, that you are, it's important to you, it matters to you. And he wants you to understand how being married matters, and how that differs from being unmarried. So again, this is not, and I want to be very clear, and sometimes maybe even Christians present it as relationships are kind of like the Hakuna Matata moment. That is, no worries. You're supposed to go into it, you know, with not even thinking about it. And somehow if you don't think about it and have no concern about it and have no worries, then everything will work out. That was the way I approached it. Well, that's not what Paul says. He says, be free from a wrong kind of concern, be free from, he goes, I want you to be free at some levels from any kind of concern which distracts you from undiluted devotion to Christ, but you are to have a proper biblical focus on the things that truly matter. Guys, there are things to be concerned about in life. And being single and pleasing God is something to be concerned about. As we'll find out also, being married and honoring and pleasing your spouse as you please the Lord is also something to be concerned about. Neither of these things is to be taken lightly. So a proper concern will bring you joy in your singleness. First, though, he says this, I want you to be free from the concerns of marriage. Right? Free from the, and again, concern here is used in a positive way. That is the proper thought process, the proper importance of doing things that are required of married people. He says, I want you to be free from having to worry about doing those things. And I don't do this very often, but what I'm going to do for just a moment here is present a case as to why you shouldn't be married. That's what the Apostle Paul does. And I do that very rarely because there's such a press in our world towards laziness concerning marriage, towards avoiding marriage, all the things. But I'm going to present to you a case, a reason or several reasons why you wouldn't get married. So I'm going to paint you that picture because that's what the Apostle Paul does. So first, free from the concerns of marriage. He doesn't want you to be concerned about the things of the world. He says, one who is married is concerned about the things of the world. Now, at first, again, that sounds sinful. We've got to be very careful with the Apostle Paul's language here. No, he's not saying that it's an ungodly worldly concern. The things of the world here can be defined as the necessary concerns of how to meet your spouse's material, emotional, spiritual, and sexual needs. How to care for your children's emotional and spiritual needs, should the Lord provide them, how to run your household. That has to do with things of living in the world. He says, look, when you get married, you have to worry about those worldly, that is things of the world, the physical world. You have to worry about those things. That's right and good. He goes, I want you to be free from that because it takes up a whole realm of your time that you could spend doing something else, that is pursuing ministry. So my first case, as it were, against marriage is that you can avoid concerns about the things of the world. That is, you're not going to have to figure out, how do I provide for a wife? How do I run the household? How do I get the groceries for a family? Right? How do I arrange and run things in such a way? How do I make enough money to possibly support us? You're going to be free from those concerns if you don't get married. Okay? So he says, I want you to be free from the concerns of the world. Right? And remember, those are, for the married person, good and godly concerns. It says in 1 Timothy 5:8, if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he is denied the faith, and he's worse than an unbeliever. So if you're married, you got to provide those things. You need to be worried about those things. You're concerned about them. But if you're unmarried, guess what? You don't have that concern. You eliminate a whole series, literally hours and hours of the week, trying to figure out just how to run your family. Katie, any idea how many hours a week you spend trying to just figure out how to get your household physically where it needs to go, get food? Just give me a ballpark. Any idea?
Not enough.
Okay, not enough. Lots and lots of hours. All right, just trying to figure out how to get my children where they need to go, how to get them fed, how to get them clothed, how to get them out of bed, how to get them to, you know, how to teach them. I guess probably most of Katie's time is spent doing that, right? So those are the kinds of things that if you are unmarried, you will never once have to do. And right now, some of my married couples are going, whoa, why did I get married? I'm going to have to do all that? Sure, right? And yet it's right and good, but it says interests are divided. Again, that's not in a sinful way. It's that there's areas where you'll please the Lord and press into ministry, and yet there's, again, whole areas of your life that have to be devoted to physical provision and emotional provision, the other things that go on with having a spouse, and if you are unmarried, you don't have to do that. It says, so that those are the things, as it were, of the world, the physical things that have to be provided. Also, there's this idea, it says he has to be concerned about how he may please his husband or wife. It says one who is married is concerned about the things of the world. That's one aspect of it. And then how he may please his husband or wife. And the reason it's both is because first he talks about the man, then he talks about being unmarried, and then he talks about the woman. The married man, the married woman have responsibilities towards each other in living out their roles. And it is vital that they do that. It is biblically prescribed that they please each other. That's right and good. Right? The husband is to do what for his wife? From Ephesians 5, he's to love his wife as a Christ-like the church. He's supposed to lay his life down for her. He nourishes and cherishes her as Christ does the church, because those are special things. But it is a whole area of your time, energy, devotion, emotion that is devoted to this one person in that special way, which is time that can't be devoted to anybody else. It's right and good for that to be the case if you're married, but if you're unmarried, you're not required. You don't have that responsibility. You can then take that time and share it with multiple people. You can spread out all of that energy, all of that care, rightfully trying to please people, that is biblically acting in godly ways, encouraging them, building them up, showing them Christ. You have all that time left over that you don't have to do that. You're not trying to rightfully please a spouse in ways that God has. I mean, wives, they're to be subject to their husbands. They're supposed to be their husband's helpmate. They're pleasing him in that way, honoring and respecting and working and coming alongside and challenging him to walk with Christ. All of these things, a huge amount of energy and effort that goes into that. Now, is that a bad thing? No. Is it a tremendously time-consuming thing? Yes. And if you're not consumed with doing that, you are freed up to do a tremendous amount of other things. So that's the first aspect. And that's the main one that I'm focusing on here. Literally, hours and hours, 160 hours in a week. I mean, if you aren't married, you're going to be freed up maybe 40 of those hours, 45 of those hours. Imagine what you could do with 45 hours devoted to, as we will see, the things of the Lord, not simply devoted to yourself. Now, he gives a couple other reasons here that I'm not going to focus on, but if you'll just look at verse 28, there's another reason why I would make the case not to get married. Marriage causes problems. Like, what? Look at verse 28. But if you marry, you've not sinned. If a virgin marries, she's not sinned. Yet such will have trouble in this life, and I'm trying to spare you. Sorry, Trey, Sierra, Daniel, Aaron, all of my married couples here. You guys, you just got each other in trouble. And how is that? Because you're sinful. And so as you try to live together and work together, you brought trouble upon one another because you sinned against one another in unique ways. I'm in the middle of all kinds of premarital counseling right now, and I've got these couples that really love each other, and they're just really happy to be together, and I keep trying, do you ever conflict? Like, we don't ever conflict. We haven't ever fought. I'm like, how do I get any material here to tell you what? I said, you will. I mean, I'm not predisposing them to harm one another, but it's just different when you don't live together. So when you start living together, the sin starts to rub on each other, and you cause problems for each other. That's just the way it is. And so Paul says, look, if you don't get married, you're free from that kind of trouble, from having to deal with your sin towards someone else in that unique and special way, and their sin towards you. You eliminate all of that, and so you can just continue to work on other areas of sanctification and work with multiple other people as well. So marriage causes the problems of having to provide these worldly things, as in things of the world. It causes the problem of having to please your husband or wife, rightfully so. Not on your outline, but also in this chapter, marriage is going to cause you problems. Now, again, Paul is simply pointing out that marriage certainly can cause some problems, even while it solves others. Marriage is not intended by God to somehow resolve all your personal, emotional, or spiritual difficulties. It definitely intensifies some of them. See, some of you are like, gasp, I thought that when I got married that I would be completed, that I would then, you know, I wouldn't have to worry about my selfishness because this other one would just, we would come out as come together, fulfilling each other, and we wouldn't have to worry about needs anymore. Actually, you didn't think that. I know that. But somehow in the back of our minds, we tend to think that it's going to be that way. Instead, what you're going to find is even in the best of marriages, that your own selfishness, that your own sinfulness is often exacerbated and made worse. And so while marriage solves some issues and is a joyful, special thing created by God, yet it also brings others. There's two other things the Apostle Paul says here. I won't dwell on them. One's in verses 25 to 27. He says, look, it's hard to be married when there's persecution. Now, I would just bring it, so he says, says, in view of this present distress, it's good for a man to remain as he is. That is, to not take on a wife if he doesn't have one. What instantly came to mind was John Bunyan, who was married. He had, I think, 5 children. And when he was put into prison, his daughter, ultimately, one of his daughters went blind. And so here he is in prison with this intense care and concern for his family, and his wife is now left trying to provide for this blind daughter and the other children without his provision. It's an incredibly difficult thing. It's a double, triple burden. And Paul is saying, look, if you get married, you're going to have to worry not only about persecution and the difficulties that come, but then you're going to have to worry about how it is that your family is suffering because you're not there with them and you're not there providing for them. And I think he's speaking specifically in light of the specific persecution of Nero that was coming. So it's kind of a unique thing. And yet, think about our day and age. I mean, persecution might be coming. And as you get married, you need to understand if you're serving and honoring the Lord and that persecution comes upon you, say maybe as the husband, that your family's going to suffer as a result of that. Again, I'm not saying in any of these things that should keep you from getting married. I'm only saying that's an added burden that you wouldn't have if you were single. You're a lot more free to do other things and not worry about you're harming your family because you're being taken away from them. The last thing he says in verses 29 to 31, my last point of again, these weren't on your outline, but my last point of convincing you that not to be married, as he says, the time is short and marriage doesn't extend into heaven. Right? Relationships do, and care and love for one another does, but marriage doesn't exist in heaven. You don't marry and you're not given in marriage in heaven. And so the relationship takes on a different form, a different tone in heaven. So it's really only for this earth. That's what marriage is for. Whereas other relationships and the love that we have for one another extends all the way through for all of eternity. So saying, look, the time is short, make full use of your time, and maybe then it would be better not to be married. So what's my case against marriage? The case is this: there's a ton of time that has to be spent just taking care of earthly, worldly things, all a huge amount of time spent pleasing, rightfully so, again, the spouse that the Lord has given you, the problems that come when there's persecution and difficulty and your family suffers, the problems that come from the fact that, you know, this life is short. And so marriage is not something that extends into the eternal state. And then the issue of how is it that I continue to care for and provide in the midst of difficult days, of difficult times. So that's the reason Paul says it might not be best to be married. So if you're single now, you might consider again, do I really want to be married? You ought to think about that. Do I think marriage is wonderful and special? Do I commend it? Do I think the Bible does? I do. But I can't avoid what the Apostle Paul says here. So maybe sometimes a rosy picture of marriage that's sometimes painted needs to be also made realistic by telling you that those are some of the difficulties. And oh, by the way, one that the Apostle Paul only alludes to here, but that tomorrow morning we'll talk about, marriage is permanent. Once you enter in, you don't go out. Okay, once you enter in, there's only a couple of things that the Bible would say you could ever exit a marriage from. And so you are then tied to that individual, regardless, at the levels the Bible prescribes of how sinful or difficult that they might be and you might be, you are tied to them for your entire life. That is not something to take lightly. That is something to carefully consider. Do you actually want to be married? Is it better than singleness? Or will you, or should you, or maybe you should begin to consider, should I think about staying single so that some of these issues, which are not in and of themselves wrong, and which, you know, marriage was designed for you to learn and grow in those areas, but maybe it would be better not to pursue those now. Because he says, so if we're on our outline here, it was the specifics of the concern. He wanted them to be free from the concerns of marriage, that is about the things of the world, how they may please their husband or wife. He wants them to be concerned about the things of the Lord. He says, one who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord. And so what does he mean there? Does he mean if you're married and you're honoring the Lord, you're not, you know, you're loving your wife, you're not concerned about the things of the Lord? Yes, you are. But what he's speaking of here is it's a technical term that is direct ministry involvement, pouring into the lives of people, pouring into building the church, pouring into missions work, those kinds of things which are directly related to spiritual tasks. I mean, certainly we understand that everything we do is supposed to be the glory of God. But here he is saying, I want you to be concerned, to be able to be focused on those pursuits that directly build and enhance and move forward the ministry of the gospel. Yes, that's what we're to do all the time. And yet when you are single, you have a precious and special opportunity to be concerned about those kinds of things without having to worry about the difficulties that come with marriage. How delighted are you to serve the Lord now? Think about what would happen if you took all of your faculties, all of your abilities, and were focusing them on pleasing and honoring Christ, pursuing the work of the ministry in every way possible, and not so much concerned about how do I have this relationship? How do I, you know, move to the next level? How do I get married? Because you'd be amazed at some of the things that you could do. So he doesn't want them concerned about, he wants them free from the concerns of marriage. He wants them to be able to be concerned then about the things of the Lord. And then he wants them to be concerned about pleasing the Lord. And it says how he's concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. And guys, that's our ultimate goal. That's our focus as believers. We want to bring glory and honor to the Lord. Colossians 1:9. For this reason also, since the day we heard of it, we have not ceased to pray for you, and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all spiritual wisdom and understanding, so that you will walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, to please him in all respects, bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all power according to his glorious might, for the attaining of all steadfastness and patience, joyously giving thanks to the Father. You guys, our whole life is to be built around the things of the Lord, pleasing the Lord, and singleness gives you a precious opportunity to do that without hindrance. And so you might just be orienting your mind at this point. How much of your life is spent on the things of the Lord, that is pursuing the work of the ministry? Not in some kind of vocation, you know, paid way, but doing the things that enhance the gospel. How much of your life is built around pleasing the Lord? That is passionately pursuing a personal walk with Christ, deepening in your love and devotion to him through spiritual discipline, through spiritual delight. How much of your life is spent passionately pursuing the work of ministry through the local church, in the church, the one another's evangelism, prayer, fellowship? Just think of it. You could stay out late, get up early, attend ministries, volunteer your time in unique and extensive ways. Are you pursuing those? Because I think most of you probably are. That's why you're here. I mean, think of more that you could do. All this free time. You're like, I don't have any free time. I'm going to school. You're not married. Okay. You don't have those things to think about. You don't have to invest all of your time in those things. And so you have so much more, even emotional and spiritual energy, as well as physical energy, to devote in those ways. Passionately pursuing the work of ministry through the local church in the world, witnessing at home, missions, caring for the poor and needy with a gospel and emphasis. Because you can pretty much travel anywhere. You can risk getting sick or banged up. You can be gone. You could possibly be gone for even months or weeks at a time. So are you living your life in such a way that you're tying yourself down to work and to school, again, which are important things, but in ways that almost replace marriage for you? As well, I'm not married, so I'll just tie myself down, my time, my attention, my thoughts, everything. I'll tie it on, still on temporal things, without my mindset being, how can I free myself up during this time of singleness to pursue the things of the Lord? I'm not saying drop out of school. I'm not saying stop working. I want to say, don't let those be your God. They're not your gods now. Pleasing and honoring the Lord is, pursuing the work of the Lord is. And those things have to fit in underneath that. They can't become a replacement for marriage for you. Well, I'm not worried about marriage, but I'm so worried about all these other things. They dominate my thinking, dominate my time. Maybe it's not work or school for you. It's just your pleasure. We'll talk about that. That dominates who you are. You just do work and school to somehow get a break to do the things that you want. And then number four, Paul wants, and in this case he speaks directly to the woman, to be concerned about the holiness of body and spirit. Now, I think the call is the same to the men. It's just that he focuses here, and so if you're looking in verse 34, as he talks about the woman, he says, the woman who is unmarried and the virgin. Interestingly, he seems to have two categories here. The ESV kind of puts it into one category, but I think it's two. That is those who very possibly have been divorced, the unmarried women, and then those who have never been married. So two categories of women. He says for both of them, he wants the same thing. He wants them to be holy in body and spirit. Now understand there that Paul is using the word holy, not as if you get married, you're unholy. He's using the word there as set apart. He wants them to be able to set apart their outer man, set apart their inner man for the purpose of pursuing the things of the Lord. Think about what our world draws women to pursue. Pursuing using their outer man to try to get a mate. Dressing it up, doing everything possible to make it appealing to someone else. So much of the time is spent, what? On just trying to find a husband or wife on the basis of external things that are done. And then the internals are not necessarily directed towards the things of the Lord, but even those are somehow fixated on how do I prepare to get a spouse. Again, men can do the same. So really, Paul is just making it clear, your whole body in this case. You don't have to devote all your time and energy to somehow attracting a mate. You can spend your time, body and soul, pursuing the things of the Lord. It isn't that you wouldn't care for yourself and try to look nice, but you don't have to spend, you don't have to have that concern. If I don't look just right or have the right thing on or do all that, then maybe I won't get married. Maybe I won't attract a man or someone that I want. So he's saying, look, I want her to be able to focus completely on serving the Lord and to be free from that kind of concern. Ladies, are you pursuing being fully set apart for Christ in both your body and your heart? Do you spend more time concerned with whether your body will be pleasing to men or whether it will be set apart for the Lord? Again, that can work back its way towards men as well, right? But that the Apostle Paul focuses directly there. I want you to be free from that concern. And now he moves to the goal of that concern. So what you're thinking right now is all right, have I maybe idolized marriage? Have I thought too much of marriage? And so that was my whole pursuit, and I didn't realize some of the difficulties that were involved. And so I've really kind of banked my whole life on doing that, and I haven't pursued the things of Christ as I might. And in fact, while I'm not married, I've replaced the pursuit of marriage with all these other pursuits that have dominated my time that have kept me away from doing the things of the Lord. That's what hopefully you're thinking of in your mind at this point. So what's the overall goal of this? Now, verse 35. Paul says, this I say for your own benefit. And can I just echo the Apostle Paul? To maybe shake you up a little bit about marriage, to shake you up a little bit about singleness, to shake you up a little bit about what you're using your body for, what you're using your inner man for. You know, again, maybe even shake you up a little bit about how devoted you are to things that aren't the pursuit of the gospel. Replacing school, replacing that with school, replacing that with your work, all of which are important, but are not supposed to dominate you like a marriage. Right? They're supposed to be held in one sense lightly so that you can continue to pursue the things that are pleasing and honoring to the Lord. He says, I want to do this for your benefit because I want you to do well in school if that's appropriate and right. But I'm telling you that for the believer, there are times there are trade-offs there. As you stay carefully involved in the body, carefully pursuing the things of the Lord, that you may not be able at times to so-called keep up with your friends around you whose whole life is school. That's it. Nothing else. I've got to get the A's. I've got to get the good job. I've got to get the great position. You don't want to keep up with them. That is not your job. Yes, you should do well. Yes, you want to be a super hard worker, but that's always going to be banked against these other priorities, the higher priority that you have. School's going to be that way. Your hobbies are going to be that way. Everything around you is going to be carefully judged in light of how it is that you pursue the things of the Lord. And guys, that's for your benefit. I tell you, you're only going to work at any job you would ever have for 40 or 50 years, maybe 60. Then you're going to die, and the rest of your life is going to be spent with the treasure that you built in heaven. Don't bank all of your stuff on the things you're doing now. Jobs, schools, other things. Yes, do it wisely and well. Yes, graduate. Yes, honor the Lord. But that is not your primary goal. Don't be wed to those things. By the way, what the Apostle Paul really is saying, look, there's one thing that's really worthy of devoting all that kind of time to if you're going to not be single. That is marriage. That is one thing that should rightly dominate your time and mind and will and affections. It's not your job. It's not these other things. Marriage is the one acceptable replacement, as it were, the one thing you can actually have your time divided doing that would take your time up in that same way. Marriage is the only other thing that would be allowed to take your time in that way. These other things should not do that. But guys, this is for your benefit. He says not to inappropriately restrain. That's the goal of the concern, B, if you're taking notes. The goal of the concern is not to inappropriately restrain you. Because I don't want to somehow say you shouldn't get married. I don't want to somehow, you know, make you fearful of marriage. But I do want you to carefully consider how it is that you are pursuing right now with a passion the things of the Lord. He says, it's for your own benefit not to put a restraint upon you. That's a really powerful word. It's to put a noose around their neck and drag them by. It's like put a leash on them. I'm not trying to drag you, says the Apostle Paul, into doing something that isn't good for you. I'm not trying to convince you not to be married. I'm only trying, as the Apostle Paul, is to get you to think carefully about this for your own benefit. Second, he says, to promote what is appropriate. To promote what is appropriate. Both marriage and singleness are equally honorable. They're just different tasks. They come with different burdens. They come with different cares. He's saying you need to be very careful. Do what's appropriate. Either be married or not, but understand what the trade-offs are. This is not to promote laziness, selfishness, brutishness, foolishness, self-righteousness. I'm going to be single or I'm entering into marriage. No, to promote what's appropriate. The Lord has something for you, and really that's for tomorrow. We'll discuss how it is that you begin to pursue that. And then lastly, he says, what? This is to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. Guys, think about those words, undistracted, that you're not slowed, blocked, interfered. Your life isn't a constant squirrel with all these other things. I'm devoted to the Lord, but I got this. I'm devoted to the Lord, but I got this. I'm devoted to the Lord, but I got to go do this. Even though you're doing those things, it is a devotion, a love of and a pursuit of Christ that presses you on past and through those other things without letting them unduly distract you. Have you gotten distracted with these other things? Not with marriage, because you're not married, but maybe you've gotten distracted with the pursuit of it. Maybe you've gotten distracted with these other things. Paul says, look, what I want for you above all things is undistracted devotion to the Lord. Again, there's a way to do that in marriage. And there's a way to do that in singleness. It's that in singleness, there's even less distraction. There's even less distraction when it comes to the things of the Lord. You remember Martha, right? His sister called Mary, who's seated at the Lord's feet, listening to his word. Martha was distracted with all her preparations. I mean, did food need to be made? Sure. Did stuff need to be done? Absolutely. Was she inappropriately distracted when she should have been doing what? She should have been with Jesus. That was the time to do that. And because she was so distracted with the other things, she didn't recognize the time when she should have broken away from them and sat at Jesus' feet and let the other things, you know, not get done at that moment. That's what happens when you get distracted. You think every moment is the time to be doing something else, and you never sit at the feet of Jesus. Or you rarely take the time. I don't have time for my time in the Word. I'm just busy. I don't have time to dig into understanding and studying the Word. I'm too busy. I don't have time to pray, to take a significant time in prayer. I'm just too busy. You're not too busy. It is too important not to do that. Martha's distracted. She came to him. Jesus, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Don't you tell the Lord that sometimes? God, don't you care that I have to get straight A's in school? Don't you care that I have to work and do well at my job? Don't you care that I want to have a social life? Don't you care that I want to do these fun things? The Lord cares. I mean, really, she's saying to Jesus, don't you care? He's your Father. He cares for everything about you. He cares for what is best for you. He wants everything that is good for you. Of course he cares. And he's telling you that those things are not to dominate you. He said, Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about so many things. Is that you? Worried and bothered, so many things. So much going on. Constantly roiled up about all the things that are happening. All the things you can't fix, all the stuff you can't do, all these things that are distracting. Worried and bothered about so many things. Yet Mary's chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. Undistracted devotion to Christ. That's your life goal. Anything you can do to promote that is what you do. Again, marriage can promote it in a certain way. Singleness promotes it in a different way. 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether then you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Colossians 3:17, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks for him to God the Father. So as you think through this, that the Apostle Paul says, look, I want you to remain unconcerned about the things that might distract you. So if you're married, you have those concerns, so you might consider not getting married so you don't have those. I want you to be concerned properly about the things of the Lord and not to get distracted, to please the Lord, to pursue the things of the Lord. So let me just ask you a couple questions about what you're doing in your life right now to secure that undistracted devotion to the Lord. Maybe what you're willing to give up. Are you willing to put down your phone? Are you willing to put it down? Stop dragging it out whenever anybody's around. You've got to check the latest thing, do the latest thing. I know the temptation. I have one. Constantly distracted, not just from people, but from the Lord. You sit down to do your devotions, what happens? The phone is calling you. The next YouTube video is calling you. The next thing to do is calling you. Are you ready to control it and stop being so distracted with it? There's probably not one of you here who doesn't wrestle with that. Maybe there might be some of you, so you have something else that it is. Are you ready to put that down? Are you ready to put down your social media? I'm not big into social media. I'm going to fast from social media. Control it. Use it well. Don't let it dominate you. You need self-control. Now that self-control means you may just need to be done with it for a period of time. But it dominates you. You're twitting this and Facebooking that and Snapchatting this and doing that. Constantly distracted. This there, that there. All these different things. Guys, that's not undiluted devotion to Christ. Undistracted devotion to Christ. You're constantly. Because it's a reflection of a heart that's never satisfied. Another conversation, another tweet, another YouTube video, another this. Never satisfied. Are you willing to put away your movies, your Netflix? For some of you, that's no big deal. Who cares? For some of you, it's a huge deal. Huge deal. You waste hours and hours and hours just sucking entertainment. Hey, do I like a good movie? I do. Right? Do I enjoy watching a fun movie? It's a great thing. Sit down with my family, enjoy that a lot. I can't let it suck my life away. And it will if I let it happen. Maybe it's your sports. Just love that. Maybe it's fantasy sports. Amazing. And even if you don't like to play sports, you can like fantasy sports and spend all your time doing that. Maybe it's clothing. It's constantly worried about it. Constantly, you know, your appearance, whatever it might be. Friendships, dating, all those things. Guys, are you willing to lay those things down to reevaluate everything in your life to see whether the Apostle Paul's call to undistracted devotion to Christ is what you're actually pursuing? Now, I mean, it's a strong message, but I don't think you'd be sitting here if that isn't what you wanted to do. So let me encourage you with some things that you could do. Get as much Bible training and spiritual instruction as possible. Your churches offer this. Take it. Everything you can find. You ought to be doing the men's Bible studies for men, women's Bible studies for women. You ought to be taking hold of the training classes. I don't have time. Yes, you do, generally. Make some time as best you can. Serve in every way possible in your church. Find ways. What am I doing? How can I serve? How can I press in? Experience missions in all its fullness. Try to find the small, you know, the short-term mission trips. Try to find ways to get on those. Well, I've got to take school in the summer. Maybe you have to. Maybe you don't. Maybe you could say, you know what, I'll spend an extra semester. Yeah, I'll be 23 when I graduate. Might even be 24. I packed my 4 years into six. Look where it got me. I don't know what you want to do. You guys, maybe you think about that. Look for ways to sacrifice your time to meet the needs of others. When the call goes out to help a couple move in your churches do that? Ours does, yours might. Are you the first one to volunteer? You're single. You ought to be there. Bring your truck. All right, got one? Bring it. You ought to be there. Instead of playing Frisbee with your friends, please, I don't want to go go help move. Go look the older ladies that need help. Something needs to be done. That ought to be you. Finding a way. Now again, I know you have work. I get that. You're not, you know, canceling work that moment to, but if you're not doing something else, well, I gotta get to work at 4 and the moving is at 12. Well, help for 3 hours. Get your work clothes and then blast work. Why? You don't have a family. You don't have to run home and fix dinner and do the other things. You go from right there to the next thing. Is that too hard for you? It isn't. Then you go from that thing to home. You crash. You go up to church the next morning. It's the beauty of being single. You don't go home and got to work out things at home and figure out what to do. You just crash. I mean, home is a place to sleep. I know if you're living with your family, other things, they might have some stuff for you to do. But hey, guys, it's just nothing like it would be if they were your family. That is your married family. Meet with lots of people. Disciple some of them. Meet with lots of people, disciple some of them. Get to know married people, hang out with them. Encourage and strengthen unmarried people. That would be this group. Enjoy some of the good things God has given you that you'll never have time for later. Yeah, take a backpack, that's cool. Just don't get consumed with it. You probably never have time to do it again in your life. It took me many years before I ever got to backpacking again. There was just too much to be done. But enjoy some of that. Use your abilities to be spontaneous for surprising acts of service, ministry, and kindness. Hey, read a lot of books. I don't have time to read books. You're not going to get more. Read a lot of books now. Put down the controller. Put away the latest whatever it is on Netflix that you're watching. It is sucking your mind dry. Replace it with the goodness of the books, the Bible certainly, but good books that the Lord has given. Put down your iPad, iPhone, game controller, Netflix, I already mentioned that. Here's something to do. Determine how little sleep you can get and still flourish spiritually and physically. Do it. Figure out how little, I'm not talking where you're stumbling around, driving off the road and killing people. Some of you get more sleep than you need, some of you get less. But some of you get less because you waste it on foolish things. So stop wasting it on foolish things, get real sleep, and then see how little that you can actually get. Because I'm not trying to be hard on you. I've done all of those things. All right? Foolishness, done it all. But I'm simply saying that you got to learn not to. To develop your character so that you can be a man and woman of God when no one is looking, not because you're trying to get a mate. Who you are on your knees before a holy God is who you actually are. Not who you are sitting in the college group. Not who you are, you know, up front on stage at church. So you are at home before you go to bed. And that you would be developing that kind of character. I hope I've challenged you a bit. I hope I've made you a little uncomfortable. And yet I hope also I've for all the believers here, I think what I've done is your heart has gone, that's what I want more than anything else in my life. I want to secure undistracted devotion to Christ. That's what I want. So let's talk about it more the rest of this weekend. Let's pray. Father, thank you for our time. Thank you for the precious privilege to look into your word. And thank you for this very frank truth of the Apostle Paul to lay out even the difficulties of marriage and to present the benefits of not having those kinds of distractions. And I pray for each one as they wrestle through what you would have for them, that you would give them wisdom and grace to make good decisions. And Lord, I pray if there's been conviction here tonight that they would respond to it. They wouldn't make excuses as to why they don't have to change or grow or make corrections to their life. Father, where there are things going well, I pray that they would rejoice in that. Father, I pray that they would encourage one another in these things and build each other up so that they might be able to accomplish all the work you have for them for your glory. In your precious name, Lord Jesus, amen.